My father-in-law was given to all kinds of pithy, quotable sayings. And one of them I'll never forget is before a sermon, he would always say that the head cannot take in more than the seat of the pants can endure. And I'm thinking of that as I speak this morning and bearing it in mind. I also, and this is just on the spur of the moment, but I think that looking out at all of you is a sermon in itself. I think here in this church, with the different races and people in this room together, we are what Jesus was talking about in what he had to say in this story. It's heartwarming. I think of this every time we come forward for communion, and I see all the very different people who are here, and I think God must love seeing that. So we have this curious story, which has always been one of my favorites. And there are two issues that come up in the story. One is Jesus' wider ministry, which Cheryl somewhat with her Kool-Aid illustrated for us. And within that story, there's another one about a woman and her unanswered prayer. And that's a very curious story, and that's what I really want to focus on today. In some ways, it's the flip side of what Joel was talking about last week. He was talking about Peter on and the storm at sea, and Jesus calling to Peter to come to him and walk on the water. Peter, a male, Jewish, an insider. And this story is about a woman whose name we do not know, female, Gentile, and an outsider. It's the flip side. Peter was one of the disciples and had spent time with Jesus, had not met Jesus before. He was rebuked for his lack of... Sorry, Peter had spent time with Jesus. She had not met Jesus before. He was rebuked for his lack of faith, and she was praised for her faith. And the disciples worshipped Jesus after he had saved Peter, and she worshipped him before she made her request. So in every way, it's the flip side of last week's story. The setting is Tyre and Sidon. That was a Roman area, which was more than... There were the two cities of Tyre and Sidon on the coast of what we now call Lebanon. But they formed an area which was ruled by the Romans. And the question is, why do you think Jesus chose to go there? And I thought of four reasons which would be a possible explanation of why Jesus decided to go to the area of Tyre and Sidon. Firstly, was it just for R&R? Did he just need time to rest? Mark tells us, so it's not in Matthew's gospel, but Mark tells us that Jesus didn't want anybody to know that he was there. And it's the only time I can think of in the gospels where Jesus wanted something and he couldn't do it. The woman found him there. That was the possible first reason, that he just wanted R&R, rest and recreation. Or did he go there to get an opportunity to speak, to teach to his disciples? Maybe he needed to get away. The situation was getting pretty hot in Judea. There was opposition to his teaching. Did he want to get away so that he could teach the disciples? Did he want to get away from the scribes and Pharisees? That's a third lesson. From the people who were beginning to oppose him strongly, and he knew his time hadn't come. Did he need to leave that area for a while? Maybe. Or is Jesus doing exactly what he said he would do, which is when the Jews won't listen, he leaves them and goes to the Gentiles? So was it R&R? Did he go to teach the disciples? Did he go to get away from the scribes and the Pharisees? Or is he doing just exactly what he said he would do, and when the Jews wouldn't listen, he went away to the Gentiles? And I think it's a bit of all four of those, and we'll see how that comes into play. So he's in the area of Tyre and Sidon, and he's with the disciples, and a woman comes up, and she's from that area, and Matthew really emphasizes the fact she's a Canaanite woman. She is not ethnically the same as the Jews. She's an outsider. And she starts making a noise behind him, calling out to him. And the disciples do, I think, what any of us would have done, and told Jesus, "Tell her to shut up. She's bothering us." And at this point, the story gets weird. This woman, we're told, she's a Gentile. She's calling out to Jesus to heal her daughter, who is possessed by a demon. And you have to wonder, how did she know who Jesus was? And she knew he was the son of David. How did she know he was there? And one of the possibilities, and we're not told this, we're told the story in just its really bare elements, but there were other Jews who had left the region of Judea and gone north, partly because of Herod. Had they witnessed to her? And we'll find out that, in fact, she knows the Old Testament, but she's desperate. Her daughter is possessed by a demon. She also had a remarkable insight into the wider significance of Jesus' ministry. She gets what so many people closer to Jesus fail to get. And I'm reminded of the centurion earlier in Matthew's gospel, who is a Roman citizen and who understood that Jesus could heal from a distance. And he, with a servant who was sick, he knew that he didn't need to ask Jesus to come to his house, that Jesus could cure him from a distance. And Jesus commends his faith. That must have sat not very well with the Jews, who felt that they were the ones who had faith. And the woman seemed to understand what it was that Eric read for us this morning. Sorry, was it? Yeah, I thought Delton read for us this morning. From Isaiah 56. And this is in the Old Testament. Isaiah says, "And the foreigners who join themselves to the Lord, to love the name of the Lord and to be his servants, all who keep Sabbath and do not profane it, and hold fast my covenant, these I will bring to my holy mountain and make them joyful in my house of prayer. For my house shall be called a house of prayer for all peoples. Thus says the Lord God, who gathers the outcasts of Israel. I will gather others to them besides those already gathered. In other words, everyone is invited to become a partaker of eternity's most amazing offer. God commits himself to the good of his people, no matter what it may cost him. And she understood that even outsiders had instant access to God in prayer. Solomon, when he dedicated the temple, had the same insight. And in the long prayer of dedication to the temples that we get in 1 Kings, when a foreigner comes and prays towards this house, then hear in heaven your dwelling place and do according to all that the foreigner calls you to do, so that all the peoples of the earth may know your name and fear you, as do your people Israel. The Jews didn't like this. They felt they were the chosen people and they just wanted to be by themselves with God. I can remember as a child hearing some of the gospel stories and Jesus saying that he had other sheep that were also of this fold. And I never liked that bit. I just wanted it to be me and the people like me with God. It isn't only children who feel like that. And do you remember when Jesus started his ministry, he went to Nazareth, where he'd grown up, to preach in the synagogue and tells the people that the prophecy of Isaiah that had been read from the scroll was fulfilled in front of their eyes. And all spoke well of him and were amazed at the gracious words that came from his mouth. And he said, truly, I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown. And then he went on to remind them of Elijah, who in a time of famine went to a widow in Sidon. And he reminded them of Elisha, who healed Naaman when there were plenty of other people with leprosy in Israel. It was someone from outside that Jesus healed. And from being spoken well of and amazing people, he taught them about the full scope of his message. And they were filled with rage and tried to push him off the top of a hill to kill him. He seemed to go out of his way to be offensive. Why did he do that? What's offensive is his universal mission. We'd rather it was just us. So, here he is in the area of Tyre and Sidon, and a woman comes seemingly out of nowhere and starts calling out, shrieking out behind him. The Greek word meant she was making a lot of noise. And the disciples said, send her away. Perhaps they thought that Jesus had gone there to teach them and they wanted to listen to him. And there's this woman making all this noise. And Jesus didn't say anything. It's not clear whether it was to the disciples that he didn't say anything or whether it was to the woman making the noise, calling out for him to heal her daughter who had the demon. But he was silent. And I thought about that silence. And maybe he's not just in a world of his own, abstractly, but maybe in the silence he is connecting with his Father, praying to his Father, both to know what to do and for the power to do it. And then Jesus said, and it's not clear again whether he's talking to the disciples or whether he's talking to the woman, or maybe both, and he said, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel, by which he means Israel, all of them lost sheep. I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. And the woman comes up and worships him. And she has calmed down now. She's not shouting. She just worshiped him and said, Lord, help me. And this is where I took the thought for the title of this sermon, The Jesus You Thought You Knew. When someone is in trouble and comes to Jesus and prays that he will help them, and he can, why does he not help? And why does he say to her, it's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs, which was a rather of an insult to the woman. What's going on? And the woman comes back and says to him, yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. And with that little exchange, we prick up our ears because it's such a harsh way for him to be dealing with her. It's shocking. You might expect an ordinary Jew to say that to a Gentile, but Jesus, does he talk like that? And what would we expect then? I think maybe after that exchange between the woman and Jesus, when she says, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table, we perhaps would expect Jesus to say, well, I suppose so. Okay then, and heal her. And at this point, I think this is the crucial point of the story. The way it's printed in our Bibles, it looks, the print looks just the same as all the rest of it, and we don't realize perhaps the tone of Jesus' voice, maybe he's got a twinkle in his eye when he says that to her. We don't have a look on his face. We don't have the full account of what it actually is taking place between Jesus and this woman. But he doesn't say, well, I suppose so. What he says to her is, great is your faith. And the woman's daughter was healed from that moment on. I just wonder several things at this point. What are we thinking as we read that story? What's going through our minds? And what is Jesus teaching us about prayer and about our knowledge of him? N.T. Wright says in a different context, this is in the context of the woman who comes to someone at midnight and wants bread to give to visitors who arrive at midnight. But Tom Wright says about that this story encourages a kind of holy boldness, a sharp knocking on the door, an insistent asking, a search that refuses to give up. And that's what our prayer should be like. This isn't just routine or formal praying, not going through the motions. There's a daily or weekly task. But when we come to Jesus with a need, we should come with a holy boldness, an insistent asking, and a search that refuses to give up. There may be more to prayer than just getting what we want. Our need brings us into the presence of Jesus, and he may be looking for us too. When we think that God is not answering our prayers, he may actually be strengthening our faith, teaching us what he's like, teaching us slowly how to see the world as he sees it, teaching us things which may be more important than the thing we're asking for. What he wants is a relationship with us. He knows each one of us individually. He knows what is in our hearts, and he wants to meet our deepest need. And that may not be what we think it is. He might have something to say to us first. Which doesn't mean that in the end he doesn't give us what we're asking for. In the end, he may do just that.